The last class Maury Schwartz taught wasn't in a lecture hall, but in his home, beside a small hibiscus plant. His body, once energetic and dancing, now sat confined to a wheelchair as ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, methodically claimed his physical abilities. Yet as his body weakened, his spirit grew remarkably stronger. "When you know how to die, you know how to live," he would say, his voice growing softer each week. This wasn't abstract philosophy. This was lived wisdom unfolding in real time. The relationship between Maury and his former student Mitch began 16 years earlier at Brandeis University. After graduation, Mitch promised to stay in touch, a promise unfulfilled for nearly two decades as he pursued career success. Their reconnection came by chance when Mitch spotted his old professor on Ted Koppel's Nightline, speaking candidly about his terminal illness. Something stirred in Mitch, a recognition of the path not taken and wisdom abandoned. Their Tuesday discussions resumed, but now the curriculum wasn't drawn from textbooks, but from the raw material of Maury's remaining days. Each Tuesday became a precious opportunity to explore what truly matters when time is running out. Before ALS, Maury lived with enthusiasm, especially through dancing. Not formal steps, but free-flowing movement that made him feel alive. Then came the stumbling, the cane, and the diagnosis, a disease that would destroy his body while leaving his mind intact. Rather than surrendering to depression, Maury chose to study his own dying process as his final research project. "I'm on the last great journey here," he told friends, "and people want me to tell them what to pack." As his condition progressed to requiring a wheelchair, Maury grew more present and appreciative of small pleasures, changing leaves, a loved one's touch, favorite foods while he could still enjoy them. He allowed himself mourning moments to mourn his losses, then purposefully turned toward what remained, transforming his circumstances through perspective. After graduation, Mitch abandoned his dream of becoming a pianist and the values he discussed with Maury. His uncle's death from cancer at 44, rather than inspiring meaningful living, drove him to obsessively chase financial security. He reinvented himself as a sports journalist, working relentlessly across cities, covering games, and filing stories. His career soared. He became an award-winning columnist, TV personality, and radio host. By conventional measures, he had succeeded. Yet something vital was missing. The profound questions about purpose and meaning from his conversations with Maury were buried under deadlines and ambition. His marriage suffered, his relationship with his brother grew distant, and his days blurred into endless travel and work. "I traded lots of dreams for a bigger paycheck," Mitch later reflected. The values Maury had championed, community, giving, creating something meaningful, had been sacrificed for wealth and recognition, revealing how easily we mistake achievement for fulfillment. After 16 years, Mitch nervously drove to visit Maury. Though his professor's body had withered, now wheelchair-bound with pale skin and covered legs, his eyes still sparkled with their old intelligence and warmth. "My old friend," Maury said, arms outstretched, "you've come back at last." The embrace stirred long-buried emotions in Mitch. Instead of the judgment he expected, he found only love. As they talked, the years melted away. Maury's question, "Are you being the person you want to be?" pierced through Mitch's facade of professional accomplishments. The answer was no. He had become someone defined by deadlines and success, while Maury, despite his illness, emanated a spiritual wealth. Rather than bitter, Maury spoke of his disease as a lens that brought life's true priorities into focus. As sunlight illuminated the oxygen tank beside him, Maury showed his vulnerability by asking Mitch to lift his arms, a task he could no longer manage. Yet he maintained his dignity, closing with an invitation. "I'd like you to come back next Tuesday. We're Tuesday people, you and I." The culture we have does not make people feel good about themselves, Maury observed. We're teaching the wrong things, and you have to be strong enough to say if the culture doesn't work, don't buy it. Create your own. These words resonated as Mitch watched people chase tennis stars' autographs, celebrities who would soon be forgotten. What drives this obsession with fame and our collective pursuit of such fleeting meaning? Maury advocated for a personal culture that prioritized human connection over acquisition, giving over receiving, and being present over constant doing. While others accumulated possessions and achievements, he focused on relationships and experiences that brought genuine joy. So many people walk around with a meaningless life, he noted. They seem half asleep, even when they're busy doing things they think are important. We often rush through days of important work, yet experience little genuine connection. Despite his limited time, Maury lived more richly than most, filling his days with meaningful conversations, simple pleasures like watching birds, and expressions of love. Someone with so little time left was teaching Mitch how to truly live. The most important thing in life is to learn how to give out love and to let it come in. Despite his deteriorating physical condition and dependency on others, Maury's conviction remained unshakable. His humanity deepened through these challenges. Love is the only rational act, he said, living this truth daily. His nurse described how he transformed routine care into moments of dignity and connection, engaging her with gratitude and genuine interest in her life. As Maury's physical abilities contracted, his capacity for love expanded. His illness stripped away distractions, leaving only what was essential. When you're dying, he explained, you see everything so clearly. He emphasized the importance of both giving and receiving love, noting how fear prevents many from truly opening themselves to others. His knowing look reminded Mitch how much of his own identity had become tied to external success. Since his diagnosis, Maury's relationships had intensified. Friends stayed close, former students made long journeys to visit, and even strangers reached out through letters. His experience raised the question, why wait for mortality to value our relationships so deeply? Take a few minutes each morning to cry about the things you've lost, Maury advised. Then stop crying and get on with the living that's still to be done. This exemplified Maury's approach, acknowledging difficult feelings fully, then deliberately choosing where to direct attention. Rather than suppressing or being consumed by emotions, he made space for both grief and gratitude. When you learn how to die, you learn how to live, he emphasized. Most people live as if death were distant rather than inevitable, postponing authentic living. For Maury, life's essentials were loving relationships, meaningful conversation, appreciation of nature, and contributing to others. Material possessions and status had fallen away. Despite his increasing discomfort, Maury maintained a paradoxical serenity. Detachment doesn't mean you don't let the experience penetrate you, he said. On the contrary, you let it penetrate you fully. That's how you are able to leave it.